Welcome to Try Not to Blink, a podcast about the ups and downs, ins and outs, news, tips, and tricks of those who live the optometry lifestyle. We want to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have always made this podcast possible. This Try Not to Blink student-focused mini-series is supported with advertising by Allergan. In case you're wondering, I'm on the East Coast. My name is Dr. James Diem, and I am joined by none other than my talented co-host, repping the West Coast, Dr. Roya Habibi. What is up, Roya?
I can never. It's mid-March.
Mid-March mini-series madness. March mini-series madness for the kids.
For all the kids, yo. I mean, it is spring break time. It is, 1 year since the C word happened and the shutdowns happened.
We're moving on. We are moving on and we're moving out.
It's crazy to think about how many good things have happened so quickly.
Yeah, so many good things.
I mean, it's happened really fast. We're vaccinated. Yeah. You know, life is good, and we're ready to go on rotation.
All right. We are so excited to continue the mini-series all about the future of optometry, the students, the kids, if you will. I'm just kidding. The young men and women that are going to carry this profession into the future. And what more important than the experience of externships, going out into the real world, quote unquote, where we, you know, push you out on your training wheels and hope you don't fall and hit your face off the pavement. Really an exciting time. I know for me, you know, it was something that I thought about, you know, from the moment I entered school, where was I going to go? Geographically speaking, experience speaking, you know, just all those things. And it was immediately something that, you know, instilled fear in my inner being, in my soul, because I was like, how am I going to make sure that I could get that rotation and do this in this, you know, order, you know, so it works in my life. And, you know, how's that going to cost? Just so many different things wrapping around my brain. One neat thing was I remember meeting other students from other schools, hearing about how they did it. And, you know, I wondered, there was some differences, you know, and I thought that was kind of interesting. So I was talking to Roya and she said, I know just the person to talk to about this. And so I would like Roya to do the honors of introducing our very special guest to talk to us tonight about the externship experience.
Obviously. Okay, so I was thinking, like, who'd be the best person to talk to? And I was like, well, obviously Berkeley's the best school. And
no bias there, Roya.
Exactly. And obviously, why not just ask the person in charge at Berkeley, basically, of everything? Oh. So Dr. Chris Wilmer, who has every accolade you'd want, including being a Berkeley lifer, but she is not only clinical professor at UC Berkeley and has been there for almost 24 years, which...
Do you have to reveal this, Roya?
Yes. I
mean, let's get real.
Okay. She asked if we could clip things out. You got it, sister.
Okay. Edit. I have a red button here that says edit. No, just... I'm really proud of that. I am.
I mean, I feel like that's a big deal.
It is.
Also, the Associate Dean of Clinical Affairs.
Yep.
Side note, the board of directors for Academy.
That is true.
Recently.
Yes. How did you know these things?
The internet, man.
Okay.
Internet.
All over TikTok.
Yeah.
It's my children. That's what's happening. They're revealing things.
Exactly. Yeah, I got lots of extra information, but I'll keep it to that for now.
Okay. Thank you.
But anyways, she is also in charge / manages the external rotations at Berkeley.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's true. It's true. And you're making it seem like I do a lot of things.
I think you do. Yeah, you have like 17 hats.
That's what it seems like.
Okay. But I am going to say, I'm going to shout out to all the amazing people that I work with and that the team is really the key. And Dr. Vicky Yu at our school is our externship director. So I work closely with her. So she is just really also the master of externships. So I've got a shout out to her as well.
What does the master of externships and team of externship masters, like, what does that look like day to day?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it is, it's so important. I think, James, you mentioned it is just critical, right? Students are excited. It is so formative for them to go out on the externship. So we really want to have a lot of good options. And Roya, to your question, the master of externships has just a lot of juggling. They've got to evaluate the programs. They have to make connections with people. They have to find a balance of different types of training opportunities. They have to make sure they have enough opportunities for their students at their school. And they need to know that they have those rotations available when they need them. You know, when do they need them throughout the residency year, but the fourth year. They've got to be flexible because faculty members out there have other lives. And maybe they're on maternity leave. Maybe they need to take leave. Maybe for that rotation, which we expected to be available, suddenly it's not. We've got to make adjustments constantly. And that happens a lot in the background. And I think students hopefully don't have to be worried by that process. They just get to select and they get to go and have an amazing training experience.
I love that.
So I want to hit the basics here, just so we kind of set the stage. All right. So what are some of the requirements for externships? Because, right, there's accreditation bodies, and, you know, then the schools may kind of take it one way or the other. And I probably Berkeley takes it to the nth degree because you guys are just nuts over there. So you probably do. And that's fine. I'll respect that.
A little.
So, you know, what are the requirements? Do you happen to know, you know, kind of so folks kind of understand nationally what we need to do to say this is an externship?
Well, we need to have an agreement. So first of all, a school needs to have an agreement with an externship clinic so that there is a, you know, an MOU, a memorandum of understanding, or some kind of relationship that's formed between the entity out in the world and the school. And that's really to protect the students. We want to make sure that we're guiding education, that we know that they're going to be safe, that we know that they're going to be covered from a malpractice perspective, that the faculty members or the ODs there are qualified and that their focus is on teaching. You know, externships are not places where people are bringing students so that they can make money off of the students. They're bringing students in so that they can train students. And I have to say, we do have occasionally an outside entity that comes to us and says, hey, I'd really love to have your interns come to my practice. And it's clear after talking with them that they really are hoping to have more patient production. Now, that would probably also include some learning, but we really have to balance whether or not this is going to be a good location for students to learn how to be good optometrists. So those are some important components. They need to have a room. I know that sounds really basic, but they need to have an exam room that they can actually...
I was going to say, what kind of room? A bedroom?
Yeah.
A
washroom? No, not a bedroom. No. You know, but there needs to be space. Do you have space for a student to come in and see patients? That's really important. That seems so basic, but sometimes people want a student and don't have space.
Yeah.
I don't know, didactic component. What do you think? Both of you, you know, not all that long ago, having done externships.
Yeah, I definitely remember some of that as some of my standout locations spent, whether it be a morning every week or a morning of each day each week or whatever, going over reviewing things and making you do extra things. As annoying as it was, it did, you know, just tie in the experience a little bit more, whether it be reviewing a case we saw and presenting the scenario. But I agree.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We I love having externs. We have externs in our office, and we have a whiteboard, you know, in all the two of our hallways. So we do whiteboard time every morning where we get together. We usually review, you know, a couple things that we task the externs with, you know, the day before. And we try to make them do a handful of presentations throughout the time. So there's some, you know, structured presentation that we'd like them to give to us and our staff to help kind of guide the conversation, engage them in the you know, in our office environment to kind of build those relationships. That's kind of how we do it. But yeah, it's structured, but not so, but we do like it. It is fun to kind of push them a little bit.
No, I think so. I think it's really fun. It definitely improves, you know, it creates more of a work and what's the word, education balance. Having externs in your clinic, it's exciting. Yeah. And I think what you brought up just now is that there also needs to be time to sit down and talk about exciting cases. Not all the time, because things, you know, get off the rails, get a little crazy in clinic, and, you know, we have to go with the flow as teachers, but having time to be able to teach is really an important component.
This isn't obviously this is a series for students, but just to take a little tangent, for doctors practicing, I mean, we have a lot of listeners that are doctors that are probably listening now that are thinking like, oh yeah, that sounds cool. Like, what are things that you would say to a doctor who's thinking, oh, I have an awesome practice, it could be a great learning experience? What would you say to those listeners that are as like a perspective from a mentor, or even just a perspective of what this entails, just tips you'd say?
Well, I would say, first of all, it's fantastic for doctors out in the community to be thinking about participating in educating our interns. I think it's fantastic. And I would say, you know, all the discussion we just had, those points I don't want to reiterate, but making sure that you just have that the focus and your goals with regards to having an intern, that you really understand what those are, that you're ready to be questioned by students and discuss cases, and also, are your patients ready to have a clinical learner within the clinic? I think that takes a little bit of finesse.
Totally.
Determining, you know, which patients can be seen by your intern and helping your intern learn the ropes of your clinic so they understand the flow. How do they work with your staff? Is that kind of what you were thinking?
Yeah, totally. I think too, I thought about it even in my own practice sometimes, but I think there's a role of just a tech, you know, just filling as a tech or filling as a learning future doctor. It seems like a little bit different role. Yeah. And so I think that's important. Even when I remember in selecting the locations I went to, I remember some people were like, oh, that's a super cool, let's say it's a trendy spot. I don't remember where they were, like, oh, that's cool, it's in San Francisco, but you're just going to be a tech all day refracting. You're not necessarily going to do more or whatever. Yeah. And so that kind of matters.
Oh, I think that really, that's a huge component. And, you know, you have to give up some control, right? To let your students actually see your patients and talk to you about clinical decision-making. And you know, it's going to take a little bit more time. Efficiency might suffer a little bit. So those are some things you have to consider. But you're right, Roya. In general, students don't want to go and be technicians. They want to go and they want to learn and they want to practice their clinical thinking and decision-making.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned a lot of, I think, interesting points that, you know, some I thought of, others I didn't. Like you said, the room, the space, I didn't really, you know, think about that. That's definitely not something I thought of. So are there then, you know, and it's okay if you don't have the exact numbers, but maybe even just to know that that is out there and it exists. Are there a number of clinical hours or patient encounters or, you know, something like that that's a standard that should be had, or how does that work?
Well, I think that's a really good question. And typically what we're looking for when somebody goes out on a rotation is we're looking for more of like a full-time week, right? Whether that be 5 8-hour days, whether it be 4 10-hour days. You know, I think the quantity of patients is not always going to be indicative of a good rotation. It's really kind of the quality of the care, the quality of the learning, those types of things. So I know that some programs are going to be really specific about patient care numbers.
Okay.
And other programs are going to be more specific about, here's the rotations you're going to do. We're going to want you to log those patient care encounters, but we're not going to have a, you know, like a threshold that you have to meet. Gotcha. And some will be days. We want you to have X number of days. And if you miss so many days, we need you to figure out how to make those up, for instance.
Yeah, do push-ups instead.
Exactly. There you go.
That's what we do. When I'm out of town, I just say, do 50 push-ups, wall sits. That's totally legit, right?
Yeah, and I think, are you having them log like heart rate and, you know, number of calories, steps, and all those things? Yeah. It could be part of the evaluation at the end. You were too sedentary. Yeah. I feel like
that's right.
A couple we're laps.
And honestly, that's all medical. Yeah, that's all medical evaluation as well.
That's right. Yeah, you issue the wearable as soon as they arrive, right? Is that what happens?
That's great. I love it.
Yeah, I think why not, right?
All right. So now tell me a little bit about your theory. So we talked about, you know, national approach. What about you at Berkeley, in Berkeley, with Berkeley? You know, what are some of your requirements, things that you look for as far as, you know, standards?
I think that's a great thing. Yeah, great question. Well, first of all, the other thing I just want to bring up is schools have different numbers of rotations outside of their home base in the fourth year. Berkeley, we have 3 out of the 5 of our rotations in the fourth year are done outside in externships. So that's how we do it at Berkeley. And other schools have more time away and some have less. It just
tell
really
me why. What do you think?
I think it depends on opportunities, clinical space, maybe that maybe there's more clinical space by having more externships, vice versa.
Are you aware of a sentiment that exists from students that, you know, kind of want to get out of school, kind of want to, you know, like I enjoy it, but, you know, like I'll just be totally transparent.
Yeah.
You're not my professor, so I'll say this. I feel like I could say that. You know, the, you know, it was like, PCO, you know, I just want to get the hell out of here. You know, like I remember people saying that and thinking that and wanting to, you know, but I had a great experience at school and, you know, it was different, but you kind of wanted to get away from the academic, at least that's how I felt. So what do you think about that? And how do you balance that with folks that have come back and
oh yeah. I think that's a really important point. I think when you go away, there's so many components that are new, exciting. Yeah. Not only are you in a new location, you're learning a new clinical protocol, you have different patients, you have different attendings. It's really exciting. It's also, you know, like you're going to a mini job 5 days a week, typically, and you're getting immersed. And then coming back, you know, that's kind of your home base where you cut your teeth, so to speak.
Right.
It is tricky. I think that is an important thing to acknowledge. And I would really encourage that students, when they come back to the home base, that they continue to push themselves to have more and more autonomy. And how can I try to get out of the rut that I was in when I was a third year? How can I make this different? And I think it's not just on the student, it's on all of us. It's been even harder with the pandemic where, you know, we can't really push the patient numbers like we would have due to just, you know, space and crowding. And
right.
So totally. That's been a challenge.
Cool.
And I can even think back, I will think back to my externships. You know, I loved being away and always tricky coming back. It's kind of like moving back home, right?
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah, it's like you're in college and you're home for Thanksgiving and it's like, you know.
Yeah,
I out of here. You're crazy a little.
Your mom is like, "What do you mean you're staying out after midnight?"
That's right.
Yeah. But I'm an adult. Yeah. Well, not under my roof. You're not.
What do you mean you didn't use neutral density filters to measure the APD? What do you mean?
Exactly.
Right?
Where did you do yours?
You know, I got to do a fantastic externship in New Mexico. And I only got to do one that was out of state at the time. That was just all that I could do because there weren't enough available for people to do many. And it was really game changing for me because I was in a like a large medical center type of setting. And the OD that I was working with was able to do so many things. And I just experienced, you know, trauma patients and disease. And he was very primary care, but wow. I was impressed. And that really just kickstarted my goal to do a residency. And, you know, it was influential. And I think that's part of, I mean, any mentorship can be influential, whether it's in-house or at an externship, you know, and I think that's also something we can promote as ODs and as students. When students go out, they can really realize that relationships that you're making with these attendings, these faculty members who want to bring you into these locations to teach you, can have a, you know, profession-long impact on you. So I think taking that into consideration when you're not only selecting, but when you really let yourself be immersed and learn and be vulnerable,
totally,
you can definitely leave with a lot that you can take with you.
You know, it's true, because I'm just, as you're thinking about this, I'm thinking about some of my locations, and I think about little things still that some of my extern, you know, teachers and professors that I worked with did or said. I mean, some of them were so subtle and little. Like, I even think about one of my favorite rotations, which I actually kind of feel lucky that I did now at this time. At Berkeley, we had the option to go to Walter Reed Medical Center, something fancier name-wise than that. But like, I worked at Walter Reed. Like, I say that sometimes casually, and I'm like, damn, I worked at Walter Reed. But I had a doctor there, and he said something like, he fit everyone there that needed their scleral lenses or any GP lens. And he said, scleral lenses are only needed as a last resort, ever. And that was his mentality, right? And I thought at the moment, that's right. That's true. This guy's so cool. He's doing it for all these intense people. And like, I still think about that every day when I bring it up as one of my first treatment options for someone who has super significant filamentary keratitis. That's not, or, you know, weird cases that I don't know why, but it fixes in my head as, and that sounds like a negative thing, like he would say that. But I think, like, I, from what I learned, can now provide something for someone that could be so much better.
You built on it. Yeah.
I don't know. I built on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You learn from them, but you also get to learn, like, this is how you practice. Now, how do I want to practice?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I tell my externs, you know, when they leave, I say, listen, I want you to take everything you learned here and file it away. And I want you to go your next rotation like you never were here, like you never learned any of it. I want you to remember it, but I want you to listen and, you know, be patient and be kind and be tolerant and be humble. You are going to be the best when you leave here. No, I'm just kidding. You're going to be the best. No, I do. I fire them up a little bit. We beat our chest and we scream at the sky. No, we do. We get excited about their experience. But I say, you know, go and, you know, if somebody does dry eye different than what we do, it's not that they're wrong, you know, because I know you just learned the way we do it here is like our Bible, and there's no other way, but you have to learn that there are other ways. So just like what you're saying, and I think that's a difficult part of this, right? Like, you're at school and you learn all these Bible things. You're like, you know, everything's like your Bible, and God forbid anybody would do, again, like, pupils any different. And then you come to our office and our technicians is doing pupils, and you're like, how could you possibly let them do that? You know, what if, you know, I've had multiple students come and they're like, you know, they're just flabbergasted that could possibly happen. So I want to ask you in that vein, what are some tools or tips for success, you know, as a student? Because really this is for our students. You know, all right, they got their rotations, whether they like them or not. How do you, you know, let's go from the beginning right on through. So you're there. What's a tip for success, you know, as you're entering into this new environment?
Yeah, I think that is a really, really good question. Well, first of all, I'm going to say, you're going to be nervous on every new rotation, okay? I don't know about you both, but I remember the night before the new start, I was a little butterfly-y. I was a little nervous.
Intimidated, for sure.
Intimidated. Maybe I don't know what's going to happen. And that's just because it's new. Reach out to your externship doc ahead of time. Introduce yourself. Email them. Hey, I'm excited. I'm coming to your location. What do I need to know? I think just making that connection. I didn't do that, to be honest. I didn't even think of doing that. I have no idea why. And I would just show up and then suddenly be like, hi, Dr. So-and-so. And, you know, I didn't really have a good sense of who they were, and I should have been more proactive on that. And now it could even be just a quick email. It could be a Zoom, whatever it might be. I think other students can give good feedback about what it was like. Maybe the insider tip, hey, here's a little pearl that you might want to know about. Here's the other thing that I tell students. you know, you kind of have the answers already as to what you're going to encounter. If I'm going to a VA, I know the types of patients I'm going to see. So maybe I should just review my glaucoma meds, and maybe I should review diabetic retinopathy because I know I'm going to see it. And what if I see it on day one and I've reviewed it and I knock it out of the park? And now I've proven to my attending that, you know, I know something. And not that you need to know everything, but it's good to know some of those gimmies, right? So have those in your pocket. I also think, you know, that little voice that tells you, hey, play it safe. Don't put yourself out there. But I always suggest that externs on that first day, if something big comes along, the doc says, hey, who wants to see this urgent care? Even though your hand, like you're trying not to volunteer, jump in with both feet and just go for it. You know, I think this is when I teach, and tell me what you think. I don't remember when students are wrong. I really remember when they don't want to try. Oh. So I always say, right, go down in flames. Go down in flames.
Speaking my language.
Right? Just give it a go. And that's really what we're looking for.
Right.
No, I love that. It is awful. Sometimes, or even just like sometimes I'll have someone shadow me and it's like, they're not asking me questions. They're not, there is a line where it's like, you're doing too much. So like, be like a, you know, B plus on excitement, you know, excited, but don't like the extra is a little bit disruptive in clinic, but be a B plus. Cause when you're just like quiet, not asking questions, you're not guessing anything wrong. It's also like, you're not giving me anything. I don't even know where your head's at. And I can't teach you anything if you're not asking.
Yeah, I think that's really true. You know, having the advice is demonstrate your thinking. Mm-hmm. And we have to demonstrate our thinking when we're teaching. So demonstrate your thinking. And it, again, you don't need to know the answer because we don't expect you to know the answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting. And I'd like to hear your feedback on this. You know, we have an interesting dynamic in our office because, my colleague in my office, one of my colleagues in my office takes students from one school. I take students from another school. We'll often have, you know, 2 to 4 students, you know, in our, between our several locations. And so, you know, we'll have opportunities where, you know, we'll switch students and change students around. So they're working with multiple providers and, you know, they'll get used to working with him and then they come with me and they're working with somebody else. They're like, well, that's not how they do it. You know, so you're kind of mixing them up even while they're at that place. And, you know, it's interesting because sometimes it's like, well, they kind of, you could tell, are trying to sort of pay most attention to the person they know is giving them the grade, you know? And it's like, you know, that's not probably all the way how it works. You know, we're all a team and, you know, we're all going to give each other feedback. But the other thing too is the extracurriculars. I'm very involved in, you know, my local association and my local society and different lecture opportunities and things like that. And so I always give students, you know, the opportunity to come with me. You know, whether it's local, national, you know, come with me, we'll take you there. And I always find it interesting to see what students' responses will be. And I just expect them to want to do these things. And I always find, like, sometimes I'm just crushed, you know, I'm just crushed that they're just like, yeah, no. You know? No, like my students, the people that are with me, like I tell them right from the beginning, like this is an expectation I have. Like an expectation I have is that you come and see what, you know, the organized part of optometry is. It's just an expectation that I have, and they know that like from the gate. That's not the case with these other students. So it's just an interesting thing. So how does that, what do you hear about that? What's your recommendation? I find that sometimes it's hard because then they're studying for board. So they're like, when they want to leave school or leave clinic, they want to go study. So what do you think about that?
I love that you give the opportunity. I think the opportunity on an externship to do things outside of the clinic day really are enriching. Yeah. And I think that continuing to encourage externs to kind of think outside the box and to do some things that maybe feel a little bit less comfortable, or maybe they're tired. But I remember when I was an extern and I was invited to some staff meetings within the hospital.
That's another one. Yeah.
And, you know, I thought, wow, this feels a little uncomfortable because here I am, I'm a student and these are all professionals and I don't know any of these people. And I'm the only student, was the only one at the location. But I just thought, you know, I want to go because my faculty member really would like me to go. And what is it going to do to harm me other than it feels maybe a little uncomfortable? And it was really interesting. I had never been in that environment. So my advice would be take advantage of as many, you know, as to an extern, take advantage of as many opportunities. It's a bit like picking an externship that maybe isn't in your most favorite part of the country. Maybe you don't love where it snows. Maybe you don't love the desert, but maybe that rotation is going to really provide something that's very enriching. We can do anything for 8, 10, 12 weeks, I would think. So just go for it and enjoy it.
Talk to me a little bit about selection process. So, you know, this is a stressful time, right? We're kind of going backwards a little bit now, but, you know, I know at PCO, like we literally pick ping pong balls from a box. That's how we did it when I was there. I think it's still how they do it. You pick a number, you pick a ball from a box, the closest to the number, that's how you get it. And listen, I worked my butt off in school. I really did. I sat in the front row, answered all the questions. I stayed late. I went early. I know that's hard to believe, Roya, but I did. I worked my butt off and, you know, I did well. And, you know, I felt like, damn it, you know, I worked hard. I should get whatever god darn, you know, place I want to go. And then it came down to ping pong balls. So, you know, at the end of the day, it all worked out. That's the moral of the story. But I would like to hear what your theory is on picking. And then, you know, I'd like to hear what you guys do.
Well, I agree. The ping pong balls is tough. you know, I think my picking was basically the secretary just kind of decided based on who knows what way back. So that felt really unfair. And one of the things I would say, regardless of, I'm going to just like do a little sidestep for a second and say, any rotation that any extern goes on, they are going to learn something. So I do think that it's tricky. There's a lot of emotions around selections. There's a lot of, I want this. This is what's going to make me better. The good news is where we go and train, we are going to learn and we're going to be better and we're going to be great optometrists. So, you know, I'll put it out there that it is anxiety producing, but it's also, you know, something that later on doesn't make a huge, huge difference. But I think how people select is important. I know at Berkeley, we have the students really decide what that process looks like. And each year we ask them, here's the way it was done by the year prior. Huh. Do you want to do it that way? Or do you want to amend that selection process?
Interesting.
And the students have really determined, they've come up with a way that feels very fair. They've tried to reduce stress by using certain techniques that, you know, limit the pressure between each selection. And sometimes they tweak it here and there. We as administrators, our job is really to guide them and to make sure that it's implemented in a way that feels fair. They're still in charge. And I know that other schools do it in different ways. It's a tricky process.
How was it done most?
But I feel really good. Oh my gosh, I knew you were going to ask me for the details. because it's so complicated.
So interesting.
I mean, it's really complicated. Well, I'll say this, and this is where I wish Vicky was here because she'd really be able to lay it out. There's a number of steps, and some of the steps include determining where you are in the pick process. There are some different groupings of picks. It could be you're picking where you're going outside. There's also where you picking, what template are you picking for your internals? There's some other things about double rotations. I mean, it gets very complicated. And, you know, this isn't even, I don't think I'm even scratching the surface.
Right. What did you
think? I can't even remember. It was a lot like probably once you picked your number, it was like a fantasy football draft, kind of. Like you were up, you went down, and then back up from the bottom or something.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Okay.
So I can't really remember all of the ways. And like,
was there beer and pizza involved?
I kind of feel like there was.
I think there's probably food. I don't know about beer. Yeah. I think that could be maybe an advantage and disadvantage for some. I don't know.
Especially for someone lower on the list. That could be bad. I don't
I think some of the things that have happened, Roya, since you've been a student, the students have done some things to make it less of a time crunch. There was even more pressure as someone selected something that the next person had to select really quickly. And that could have, you know, what I select might impact what you're going to select. And so I think some of that has been remedied. But I think having the students really involved in deciding what that process is has made it feel much more fair than if at Berkeley we were just deciding for them, for instance. That being said, you know, there are always things that are difficult when someone doesn't get the first choice. And one of the other things that we've really wanted to honor at Berkeley is that an extern that has put themselves out there and allowed us to send a student, you know, they're very valuable to us and their dedication is very meaningful. And so we really want to honor that as well. And when a student has selected a spot, we want to make sure that that can't suddenly be undone because a student doesn't want to go there. So we are asking our students to honor the decision to go to a certain rotation because they've selected and because we've committed to that site that they would have one of our students.
Yeah. Yeah. What a crazy time. You know, I remember just being crushed by the ping pong balls, you know, I just remember being
crushed. I am so sorry.
but hey, I mean, the moral of the story is, that, like I said, my first rotation, I wanted to go to a Native American reservation, Indian Health Service in Arizona. I lost the ping pong ball match. And I end up getting, the leftover, and the leftover place happened to be in my hometown. Just what was left on the list. And so I picked my hometown. I lived at home, and, it's the practice that I now, you know, I'm part owner of, and, it all worked out the way that it was supposed to be. And so I think, you know, I tell students that all the time, look, just like you said, wherever you go, you're going to learn. I do believe things happen for a reason. And when it comes to this, it's absolutely true. So I'd like to hear a little bit about dealing with students that may be in situations that end up to be less than desirable. So I don't, you know, I think this is probably very rare. I think it's probably not, something that's common, but, you know, certainly, you're sending students all across the country. You're dealing with people that have different levels of time, right? That's one thing, time, different levels of patience, different levels of what's the right word I want to look for? Just the understanding of dealing with folks of even different backgrounds, you know, that's another one I would say, that, you know, I think, you know, and I'll just be very honest, in our area, I'm in a very, you know, homogeneous, area. And so when I have an intern that doesn't look like everyone else, a lot of times those interns, you know, are in an environment that maybe they've never been in their entire life, you know, and that's always an interesting thing, you know, that we need to kind of head off and deal with and make sure our patients understand and respect, you know, the intern. But I'd like to know, you know, if that's something you deal with and how do you deal with that? And, you know, any advice you could give to students in those positions?
Oh, I think that's a really important point. You know, student safety, student experience, very, very important to us. And one of the things that I would say all externship directors are very aware of is curating their offerings, meaning that, we have externships, we send students, and our job is to constantly be evaluating how are those externships performing? Are students learning? Are they happy? Are there any issues that are of concern, whether they be safety within the clinic, outside the clinic, the teaching is not what we expect it to be, those types of things. And when something doesn't seem to be going quite as well as we'd like it to be, then it means reaching out to that site, talking about it, what's going on. I'm very intolerant of safety concerns. If there's a safety concern, you know, that student, if need be, will be flown home. There are other issues that, you know, there can be, there's a learning curve for the OD also in charge. So I want to be thoughtful about that, that someone who's learning to work with an extern may not initially have a really strong didactic program. Well, that's up to us to really help them, you know, and guide them and mentor them. But overall, I know for our school and externship directors, they are a dedicated group of people, I have to say, which is not me. I'm not the externship director. I'm not, you know, trying to take the thunder of Vicky Yu, but working with these programs, it's like a real love and passion. And so making sure that those programs are strong and providing a good environment in all the different ways, you know, like you said, it's not just, are you going to see patients? Are you going to be in an environment where somebody understands you, makes you feel comfortable, gives you a good learning environment? And so I would say to externs, communicate with your school. I think sometimes students are really, they're trying to be strong in some situations. Most situations are fantastic. And sometimes it's not going well. And it's not a sign of weakness to reach back to your school and to your externship director and say, hey, this is what's happening. Sometimes it's just a phone call and maybe it's a bit of advice. Maybe sometimes there's something more significant that needs to be addressed. But don't be shy. Don't let time go by and just say, I'm going to just get through this. Your training is too important. And each day and each rotation is too critical for you to just, you know, not speak up if you feel like you should be.
Yeah, absolutely. Very powerful point. And certainly I know that, you know, all externships should know who that point of contact is, you know, and someone who's safe, you know, to reach out to be able to speak, you know, their mind if there's any concerns of anything along those lines. So I see that you are a former, maybe current, soccer player. Is that correct?
Well, I am a former soccer player for many decades.
Cool.
You know, not so much anymore. I did a lot of coaching.
Neat.
You know, once I could no longer run like I thought I should be able to.
So where did you play soccer? Let me hear about that.
So I played my whole life, played in Southern California, played for my high school varsity team. My high school, I was the first girls varsity team when I arrived, which was, I'm not trying to, you already said how old I was though, right? You said how,
I didn't.
How long I've been at Berkeley.
Oh, I guess you could maybe do some math.
Yeah, I guess you could kind of make some calculations, which let's just move on.
That's awesome. So, you know, so then
it's been a big deal. Then I came up to, I went to school in Santa Cruz and I played soccer, not for the university, but for the city. I've just basically played my whole life until I got old enough that I had kids. And then I, you know,
coached.
Then I coached.
That's cool.
You are the perfect coach though.
I don't know. Coaching is like teaching, right?
aspect of life, coaching is mentoring is your thing.
It is.
Speaking of your thing, we do this with all of our guests, but I think it's important to leave this cherry on top for all of our listeners.
Okay.
We've asked you all these questions about, you know, mentoring and residencies we could ask in the future, but externships and Berkeley, but like we need to know the you of Dr. Chris Wilmer. So we have a couple questions that we ask our guests.
Okay,
just
I'm ready.
Simple, easy, get to know you questions. So one of my favorite questions to ask, very important. Do you arrive, your flight's at 5 p.m. today. How early do you get to the airport?
I'm not going to cut it close. No, I'm not a 1 o'clock, but I'm definitely going to leave
3.
I think I would be leaving. It's at 5. I'm going to leave my house probably 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, I'm probably going to park and just, you know, casually walk to the terminal.
No rush.
No. And then I'm going to go through, you know, at Oakland International, I'm going to go through, security at gate one because, you know, usually people are at gate two. And then I'm going to hang out and sit because I don't get to sit uninterrupted very much. And right. And that's probably what's going to happen.
Okay. Love part it. B of this question.
I love these questions.
Do you drive with your gas till the empty sign comes on? Like how soon do you fill your gas tank up?
Okay. No, I would never go toward empty. No. So, and I'm going to give you a little background on that.
Thank you.
I lived in Santa Cruz when the Loma Prieta earthquake happened.
Oh,
okay. And I lived only 1 mile from the epicenter. Oh. And I was just young, had no gas in my car, didn't have any backup water because I'd taken it on a trip and didn't replace it, had zero cash in my wallet. We have no power. And guess what? You can't get gas. Okay. So does this answer your question?
Traumatized.
Never again.
Never again am I letting it go toward empty.
You taught each your kids that too.
Yeah.
They all fear the next big earthquake and running out of gas.
No, they don't fear the earthquake. They just, you know, don't run out of gas. That's basically what I'm going to say.
How old are your children?
They are teenagers. I can't believe that. So I have two sons. One is 15 and a half, which means he is studying for his learner's permit, you guys.
Ooh. And now he knows the value in filling up the tank.
And now he knows to get gas. Okay, so there we go. Then I have a 13 and a half year old boy, boys.
Two boys, got it. And what is your refractive error?
Okay, do you want to guess?
I will.
You're just like a gestalt.
Going to say -175 OU.
Okay, Roy, what do you
Plano.
Think?
I say Plano.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, no.
What are you, -10?
Plus
no,
two.
No, I'm not
plus
10 two. Either. Nothing. There's nothing wrong with being 10. No, I'm not a plus. I'm not a high probe. I am.
He's definitely not a high probe. No question.
I'm going to say 475.
475.
Okay. A little bit of snow.
That was too easy.
I know. Well, I wanted to see what you guys were going to say.
Man, I'm surprised neither one of us got it.
Why would you say Plano, Roya? That's interesting.
She's Plano.
I'm a Plano.
Are you Plano? Oh my goodness.
I'm a little high probe actually, but
I think I knew that when you were at Berkeley.
There's not many, right?
I mean, I have the most perfectly made eye. That's one of the few things I learned from Berkeley.
She's Plano, spherical, and orthophoric. You know,
zero. Perfect. Very few aberrations in my eyes.
There we go. I mean, gosh, I'm going to make a note of that.
Let me write your children. Do they have a refractive error?
No, like a little bit of plus, a little bit of still.
Okay.
You know, and they are soccer players, by the way. I will also plug that.
Awesome.
Because, you know, the minute they could walk, they had a soccer ball in their feet.
Cool. Cool.
And that is one of the things about this pandemic that's bothering me. I cannot watch my children play soccer, and I really can't wait to get back to that.
It is a lot of these small things that just have been adding up as frustrations. Okay. If you weren't a Berkeley lifer and you know all these, if you weren't an optometrist, what would you have done instead?
Oh, yeah. I love that question. Okay, here's what I would be doing. At least one of the things. I would love to be a National Geographic photographer and travel the world because I love photography and I like to travel and I'd love to go and really just take photos of different cultures and communities and animals and go into the jungle and do cool adventures.
Like, why can't optometrists do like eye exams on animals too? Yeah. I think about why did we link ourselves to a small dark room?
I guess because if we were doing eye exams on animals, we'd be vets.
There you go.
We have optometric vets.
I will say, you know, I love optometry. I love being able to talk with patients and help patients see and all the things we get to do. But I really didn't think about it being a profession in the dark.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
That was one thing I didn't really think about.
None of us did. Well, Roy, I think it's time to tee up the final
question. The last but most important question. Yeah, most important.
Okay. Gosh.
We need to know what your spirit animal is. This is, you know, your defining animal, defines your personality. You know, I could go on definition to let you think a little longer, but it's just the animal that encompasses you. And someone's like, oh yeah, she's this. You're like, I get her.
Gosh, I don't know. That's a good one. That's a really good one because, you know, I feel like I've had different animals I might be pointing to, but my kids have taken all those. So
first impression.
You know, I think that the animal I really think is amazing is the giraffe.
Oh, why?
And I think that the giraffes have this perspective, right? They've got this view and they've got perspective, and that the way they move is kind of deliberate and graceful.
I like that.
Great. And I don't know.
You are
a
giraffe.
They're pretty amazing.
You're very.
I'm not saying I'm amazing, but the giraffe. I'll tell you one story about a giraffe when I was in Africa. And this was before I had children, and I actually could have spent time like that away.
Yeah. You were interviewing for the National Geographic job.
Right. I didn't have a good camera, though, at the time. But that's I drove into this game park in Africa, in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I just realized I just drove by a giraffe. And I stopped and backed up. And sure enough, there was this tall, tall, beautiful giraffe. Cool. Just right there next to the road, and it just walked away with those big legs.
Awesome.
So I guess that's my answer.
Giraffe. I think that is a good, you know, metaphor for externs, right? Be a giraffe.
Be a giraffe and have perspective.
Perspective.
Yeah.
Right? It's a good metaphor, a good way to end this conversation. You rock. It was such a pleasure chatting with you. I am absolutely sure we will see you very soon when we all return to life at meetings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
We knew it.
Thank you again.
Yes. Thank you for your time, for joining us, speaking and motivating all of our listeners, and all the mentorship you have provided both to myself and to many others. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you both. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's it. Before we go, reach out to us for feedback, questions, stories, things you want us to talk about, either on our email or on our Instagram or Facebook. This Try Not to Blink student focus miniseries is supported with advertising by Allergan. We also never depart without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for their support, both for the amazing lenses they make and the great people they are to work with. And be sure and tune in and listen to our next episode. But until then, try not to blink.